Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA, to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
Context and Clarity has been called a community-based pro-practice masterclass for architects. It's awfully high praise, but since we began this journey back in April of 2020, we've certainly grown into a community of small firm architects, all focused on what matters most to their success. And by the way, it doesn't matter if you're the employee of a firm that's dreaming of going out on your own, or you've owned your own firm for 26 years. There's something here for everyone, and that's where you come in. Thanks for listening, and welcome to the Context and Clarity podcast. Every week, we have a conversation with an expert or a thought leader on things that matter most to the success of architects just like you. Then we go backstage with someone from our community, and we talk about what we learned, what our biggest takeaways were, and how we're going to apply what we heard to our own businesses. In this episode, we talked to Matt Forget. He's one half of the husband and wife team at Five Architecture, and he and his wife, Kenya, are the founders of Sticks and Bricks. It's a creative place for children to explore architecture. Kenya's and Matt's individual stories begin with floor plans in the home section of the newspaper. I actually identify with that. And then they intersect in architecture school. They eventually encompass their growing family and finally pivot into entrepreneurism as the world shuts down during the global pandemic. From where I sit, Matt and Kenya's story is the story of entrepreneur architects. I hope you're inspired by this episode as much as we were by Matt and Kenya's story. For this episode, our backstage guests are Ithaca, New York architect, translator, and QAQC hawk, Christian Nielsen Palacios. His firm is Opus 2 MBE. And we're joined by Farmington, Michigan-based educator and architect Kenneth Crutcher of Crutcher Studio. I'm curious to hear their takeaways, so let's go backstage and listen in as my co-host Catherine McPhail, Christian, Kenneth, and I all talk about our conversation with Matt Forget.
So Christian and Ken, welcome backstage.
Hello. Nice to be back here.
It's great to have you both here with us backstage today. And I don't know about you, but I really enjoyed that conversation with Matt Forget today. What did you think? What are your biggest takeaways about that conversation?
Well, it was a lot of fun. It made me want to go buy some Legos and other toys and start creating that way like I did in my childhood and youth.
Yeah, you know, that I used to love making stuff. And I, even through architecture school, I had a reason to make stuff. So that was great. And then since now I'm practicing, I haven't made a physical model since probably, I don't know, like 2002. So it's been 20 years that I haven't made one. And Chris said in the comments, like, I can decide that's what I do as part of my practice. But realistically, I don't have that kind of time.
I was thinking the same thing. I miss making models, and I've got a couple of projects right now where I really wish I could sit down and build a model just to play around with it. And I just can't do it. And I can't hire somebody to do it because that defeats the purpose.
Yeah, right. Why would you want to hire someone to?
Yeah, it's that exploration, right? You've got to do the exploration itself. I remember seeing that documentary. I don't remember what it was called now, but it's quite a few years ago, I suppose, is about Frank Gehry. and you got to see him design. And, you know, there's that building. I think it was for the advertising agency originally. It's changed hands now, but he put the binoculars down and, you know, all this. That was the version of that original model. But I remember whatever the project was, he took a piece of paper, right, and he crumpled it up and set it there. Yeah. And that was the beginning of the exploration for that project. And I think to your point, whether you're Frank Gehry crumpling up pieces of paper and putting binoculars.
Maybe that's next, McDonald's.
Maybe cut. McDonald's is next. Putting binoculars on the table, I think it is about that exploration, right? So it would defeat the purpose.
Exactly. I guess I can appreciate him making the model pieces for the kits. It sounds like fun. But for me, one of the enjoyable parts, I guess the most interesting part of building the model was actually making the parts. And I used to, in my youth, would do scale models, did a lot of the military models and cars and things like that. And even though the kit came with all the pieces and parts, I would still make my own from the pieces and parts.
Yeah.
If I did a whole series of spaceships where I took the pieces and parts from different models and put them together to make my own spaceships.
I think you and I are the opposite on that regard, because while I understood the convenience and the of doing a model while you were designing, I was pretty bad doing the final one, and they never looked good enough to me. So watching this, I said, boy, if I had had a laser cutter like he does, then I would enjoy it, because I would get the accurate, perfectly cut things. And then, yeah.
When I was at Yamasaki's office, that was one of the things this intern got to do, is work in the model shop. And we were building these huge models that were shipped over to Saudi Arabia. And now there's all this talk about laser cutters and CNC and all this stuff. We did that stuff by hand. And there was some intricate stuff that was done with casting. And even for casting, because we did actual brass casting pieces for some of the models, even that was done with a mold, was done by hand and then sent out to be cast. So all this stuff of plexiglass and cutting and, you know, using a table saw and bandsaw and those things to make these intricate models, you know, that was how I learned to build models. And one of the most interesting things I got to see was when they moved the office, cleaned out the basement, and they had saved the study models from the World Trade Center. And there was about five or six different iterations, because that building and all of his buildings were designed in model. So he did study models of everything. And there would be five or six different study models that were of the level, you know, we would call a finished model when we were in school, but these were studies. He was just doing like a quick sketch kind of thing.
That's amazing. You know, and to think about what Kenya and Matt are doing with sticks and bricks, and they're for ages 7 and up. I remember listening to them on the podcast with Mark LePage, episode 333 of the Entree Architect podcast, if you're interested. I think, you know, they've got their own test lab with 3 kids. And I think when they started this, the middle or oldest was 7 years old, and they realized that younger than that kid, it was too young, right? They couldn't quite do all the things and grasp it all. And so, you know, doing it for kids that young, obviously they weren't going to turn them loose with X-Acto knives, but I think, you know, to your point about like the finished models and the World Trade Center, when Matt was talking about one of their next products coming out is a skyscraper. You know, as a kid that spent most of my childhood in and around Chicago, you know, where skyscrapers are, to me, that's fascinating. You know, getting to build one of those kits and kind of getting some rudimentary understanding of how things go together and how things are proportioned. I think the whole, I mean, it started out being called ArchiCamp. Now it's Sticks and Bricks. They've rebranded at the end of last year, but I think their whole concept is fascinating.
What were those blocks that those blocks that Frank Lloyd Wright said he grew up on? His mother gave him a set of blocks. There was a name for them. They're wooden blocks. I think they're still available. That's something he was introduced to, and look where it took him.
I had plenty of Lego, which were way better than whatever Frank Lloyd Wright played with. But if it were because of that, I would have been the best architect in the world, and nobody would be talking about Frank Lloyd Wright, but about me.
Yeah.
But I said this morning in Clubhouse that I miss the old Lego sets that had a ton of pieces and just kind of inspirational pictures on the box, but no instructions. And you could make anything and be just use your own imagination.
Kids are creative by nature. They're inquisitive and curious by nature. And I think there's something to be said for just putting a tangible object in their hands and letting them build. Kids like Lego, you know, are my age, children and young and older, there's something to be said for like holding pieces in your hand and putting them together, right? That's that ability to make. And kids are makers by nature. They want to make stuff. They want to create stuff, whether it be a fort, a comic book, a something. Like, they just want to create stuff. They want to emulate things that they've seen. So putting like the objects of building in their hands, I think that's part of the reason why Lego is so successful, is that they're able to take those ideas that they have in their mind and somehow like quantify them into something that is built. They can't build a building. Let's build a small version of it.
And now Lego has made all these fancy things that they even have these very expensive architectural things. Like they have, I don't know, the Empire State Building and maybe the Guggenheim and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not interested in having those. You know, even though I love those buildings and stuff, but to have a kit that the only thing you can make is a small replica of the Empire State Building, that's not for me.
So I think there's one thing I do this, a workshop with a design workshop with some students, and we have them build models using SketchUp. And one of the things we stress as part of the design process and as they're playing around is that there's no wrong answer. You know, you want to come up with some ideas, you put this stuff together however you think you want to put it together. There's no wrong way to do it. There's no one way to do it. You can have fun and play with it. And I think those model kits, like Christian was talking about, that it's a bunch of Legos to make a certain thing, that doesn't give you the freedom. That makes it possible to have a wrong answer. If you don't follow the directions, you're going to come up with the wrong thing.
Yeah, I didn't realize what was bothered me about that, but that's it. You have to do it that one particular way with those 1,000 blocks. Each one in the right place or else it's wrong, you know? So I don't like
I want to go buy one of those kits at the Guggenheim and maybe the Washington Monument or something like that.
Do a mashup.
Mash them up.
Yeah, it would be fun.
I've got a nephew that's into cars. And so he gets it's the same as the architectures, except it's for exotic cars. And they're, I don't know what the scale is. They end up being a large model. And so he goes through, it's exactly as you described. There's one way to do it, right? You build this Lamborghini or this truck or whatever it is that the kit is for. What he has started doing, to his credit, is he's gone out looking for other blocks where he can modify the car. So he you know, he's taking it to another level, but I don't think that's terribly common. I think, I built the thing and now there it is. I looked up the Frank Lloyd Wright blocks, and apologies to any of you that are German speakers because I'm about to butcher this, but they're called Froebel, I'm going to say.
Oh, yeah.
The maple wood blocks are in my fingers to this day, said Frank Lloyd Wright, attesting to the influence of the Froebel blocks on his work.
I think also one of the things that I liked about today's session was that this week we were talking about how to engage people into understanding architecture and what we do. And I think Matt and his wife are doing things the right way, I'm guessing, because I think we as architects, we tend to create content, whether it's blogs or articles or podcasts, with a few exceptions, that we love and they are of interest to us, but probably not to the general public and much less for children. Like if I can mention, Mark LePage's podcast with Patrick McLamy, it may be one of my all-time favorites. I love that podcast. But my wife, my sons, my future grandsons, they probably couldn't care less about that stuff. And, trying to bring the new generations and the general public into our world and understand what we do involves a conscious effort. You know, I remember with talking at the table after lunch with my family, and if my sister Margarita and I were using any architectural jargon, they would object and they would say, come on, use regular language and stuff like that. Stop that stuff that only you guys can understand. And we tend to forget that.
That's a really important lesson. And I think you're exactly right. I think they're doing it right. There's so many levels. And I know I said this when we were talking to Matt, but, you know, a kid gets one of these kits and they start putting together the A-frame house or the hut or the skyscraper that's coming soon or whatever it is. And they get a sense of accomplishment. They get some sense of how materials fit together. They get a sense of scale and proportion. They may become more aware of their surroundings. Oh, this is what that is, or this is why that is that way. I think there's so many layers of things that they can learn. And I don't, if one of them becomes an architect, fantastic. If none of them do, no problem, because I think they're, at the very least, they're probably more aware of materiality, of space, of the function of building and design and cities, depending on what all they work on, than they would have been. Years ago, I worked on a lot of what we would call T&D, traditional neighborhood design, new urbanists, land plans and things like this. And I always enjoyed that because both my parents were from farms, but I've spent my entire life basically in the city, Atlanta or Chicago, now Indianapolis. I live 5 miles from the center of the city. And we would design these projects to basically emulate city neighborhoods, right? Walkable communities and density and things like that. And it used to always bother me because I was looking at it with sprawl and everything that happens, thinking about the fact that most of the students going to architecture school, if that's where they were headed, probably never grew up in a walkable community. They're in some suburban whatever, and they don't understand walkability or urban or, you know, these relationships to the street and things like that. There are some things that are being lost that I think that with these models, again, whether you become an architect or a planner or anything or not, I think there's an inherent benefit to society. That sounds very stilted, but I think there's a benefit to society by having activities like this.
I agree. It's like you're not necessarily making an architect, but you're making a better client, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but also,
exactly.
Like you said, a better citizen.
Yes.
Somebody who appreciates the community, appreciates things about the built environment.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I
the
think
better,
there's something
better planning commissioners.
Yeah, yeah, maybe so. But I think that tangible, we talked about this morning. Will Legos go away because of metaverse or not? We weren't really talking about metaverse. We're talking about Roblox and Minecraft. I don't think they do. I think there's something about the tangible, you know, holding things and fitting things together. And, you know, in Matt and Kenya's models, fitting the basswood pieces together, that you can't replace that with clicks of a mouse or, you know, swipes of your thumb on a screen.
I hope so. I'm I was thinking a few seconds ago about the last model I made. It was during my graduate school years at Cornell. One of my professors was a guy named Christian Otto, and his specialty was Baroque architecture, one of his specialties. And specifically a guy named Balthasar Neumann from Germany, who designed all these fantastic Baroque buildings. And one of them was a little chapel. I don't remember the location or whatever, but it was all about how he used light to do it, you know, to as an element, just like stone or brick or whatever. And that on the day of St. Michael's or something, the light would come through a certain window and hit the statue of St. Michael's inside the church. And I thought that was great. And it's the kind of thing that you can't just read about to understand it. So I did a project that was creating like a little very simplified model of the inside of that church with wood and plaster and whatever, so I could get the vaults, and then putting a camera under the thing. So the model was put on a piece of glass and I had a camera under it. And then I created a system where you could move a light to shine through the openings according to the time of year. And people loved what I did. And I thought it was also a relatively ugly model, but it took me 2 months to do this project. And I think 80% of the members of Antwerp Architect could do the same thing now in 45 minutes with SketchUp. And, you know, and that's where my fear is, based on the comments this morning, that maybe children are just going to want to build Legos without having physical Legos and just use an app on their tablets or something.
I don't know. I mean, I think people just build out of whatever they have in front of them, you know, like dinner, mashed potatoes and some other stuff. You can assemble it, or at least my kids assemble it into. How many times were we told not to play with our food? I think that's what we were doing. We were just building stuff. I just think, I mean, it's kind of similar to the argument that people have about hand drawing versus computer drawing. And they're afraid that now there will be no soul in drawing. And I just don't see that happening. I mean, people still draw and they make beautiful drawings by hand if they are those types of people.
Yeah, I agree. If you put the soul into the work, it's going to go into the work no matter what tool you use.
I think that technology has changed a lot, obviously, in 20 years, 40 years, 50 years. But it just creates new exciting things, like the whole metaverse that we're going to be talking about later. But anyway, it's not the same old thing, but we can still do the same old thing if we want to.
I think the model building aspect of it, and part of engaging with the clients and engaging with the public, that's something that I think crosses over that technology hurdle. Because I find that even in the computer generated models, they're either printed out on paper or they're on screen. And a lot of people still can't grasp it like they would a pile of sticks and paper on a desk. And I think that makes a big, big difference.
Oh, it absolutely does. Yeah. Inhabiting a model, like with your eyes and leaning down and looking through the windows and things, it is a totally different thing than the computer model.
Because there's some people that just aren't, they're just not graphically literate.
Yeah. Now, arguably, you could use VR glasses, but it comes down to the immersiveness, right? If I have a physical model, like you said, I can bend down or I can lift it up and I can look at it. Or, you know, in Christian's example, you know, the light moving can show me the year, right, of how the light, which is fascinating. Hopefully that inspires people to go see the real thing. You know, if they see it in SketchUp or explore it further. But I think it's, eventually, it comes down to, because we're not every, like you said, Ken, not everybody is graphically literate. I think it comes down to how immersive is it, right? Okay, this is simple. I can hold this up and I can look in it and I can spin it around. And you all probably had a professor too that liked to turn it upside down and say, "Well, if it was upside down, you know, that kind of thing." but I do know of architects who have committed themselves to every conversation I'll say with clients, every presentation to clients is through VR glasses, you know, which is still digital, but theoretically, as long as it doesn't make you sick, some people don't react well to them, but is virtually immersive. So it's more like, you know, having a physical thing, but in a virtual world. But still, I cannot see. Well, put it this way. If it ever does replace the Legos and all these other things, then we're to that scene in the movie WALL-E, where we're all just these big, fat, half-naked people with VR glasses in beach chairs on some spaceship somewhere.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
I didn't say there was anything wrong with it. I'm just saying that's the eventuality.
Like well, I mean, yeah, but some people still insist on going out for hikes because there's still some people who'd rather do that.
Sure.
You know? Also, it's just completely unrealistic for me to build a model of, it takes me 10 hours to build a virtual model of someone's house. And then I start designing, you know, on that. But if I were to build a physical model, it would take me, it depends on the model, right? Christian, how long did it take you 2 weeks to do that church?
More than that, probably, but yeah.
Yeah, it just takes a long time if you want to have a nice model. And then trying to use that as the base, and you have to think about how am I going to keep taking things on and off of this base? And then you have to cut things out, like you said, Ken, and then make a new one. I don't know. It's just like so, so time consuming that for renovations, it'll be hard.
Well, I think there's something I'm coming to realize now, that there's of different types of people in this world. Some mm-hmm. people in making a trip, some people are interested in the destination. And some people are interested in the trip mm-hmm. and then the journey.
And the journey, yes.
And doing the model building as an exercise, part of the design process, is part of that journey.
Yeah,
for sure. For some, building that finished model of the finished thing after you've got everything worked out, that's just getting to the end of the trip. So that's like, you know, taking a teleportation device where you get from A to B and you just see what's there. But building a model, building the study model, building a series of models, iterations of models, putting it together, taking it apart, trying different pieces, that's part of the journey of, you know, just going down the road. And you may not even know where the destination is. It's just, that's, you know, part of the experience of just, you know, making the journey.
Right. But that's for you, not for your client, right? I mean, you get right. something out of that. Like, I couldn't show most of my sketch models because once I figured out some part of it, I just wouldn't finish the rest of it because I wasn't interested in just finishing it because that wasn't the point.
Right. And I think that's the difference. A lot of clients, they want the solution.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of designers, we like, and maybe folks like me, or maybe I'm alone in this, but, you know, the experience of going through the iterations and getting to the solution mm-hmm. is as much enjoyment as getting to the final solution is.
Okay, this is not the topic of the day, but I've got to run with that because when clients are just looking for the solution and we allow them to just value the solution, I think the demonstration of your value as an architect is probably mostly in the journey. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, there are stylistic decisions and you may be hired. Oh, I love Ken's, you know, the style of the homes or, you know, something like that, or Calatrava or Zaha, whatever, right? There are people that value that, but I think the true value of an architect is in that journey, right? The mm-hmm. solving of the problems, the reacting, all of those things. So that would be my question or my pushback on that is because ultimately this is all about communication. Should we take them along the journey with the sketch models, the study models? You know, you start working on something, you figure it out. Okay, well, there it is. There's a solution for this part of it. And then next week we start over with a different model, or, you know, we add pieces on or pull pieces off. I think to me, that's kind of fascinating, right? And I don't do architecture anymore, right? I do the marketing, the branding, the wordsmithing, all of those types of things. I think there's some value to letting our clients see and feel and realize how messy the process is. Because they look at it, you know, I could, if I sit with a client, we're talking about something, we're working on a tagline, let's just say, for their homepage of their website. If I blurt something out instantaneously that they love, right? It's just an epiphany. It comes to me and I blurt it out in 15 seconds. What is the natural reaction?
I'm paying you too much.
Yeah. Why did that cost me $10,000? That took 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
But when we go through the process, not that I'm advocating for faking anything or, you know, being inauthentic or anything like that, but when they go through the process and they see the iterations and they, I think dragging them down into the mud with you, I think there's some value to that.
Yeah.
Maybe I know. Well, the other thing is that being in the mud is the fun part of the process.
So I agree. I absolutely agree.
To say, you know, if you already have the design that you got from a magazine or something and you just want me to do the drawings, I'll charge you more because you took all the fun part away from the thing, you know.
I like that approach.
Yeah, that's true. I might try that one, Christian. the way I present the projects is kind of going through my process where I say, this is what, like right now I'm working on this builder house that they want it to be a nice house, but it's a builder house. So anyway, but there's this whole tumbleweed area in the middle. You know how builders just have this area that has nothing in it between the kitchen and and it's huge. It's like the size of my house footprint. Mm-hmm. Anyway. So I would say, this is the problem. And this is what I'm trying to solve these problems. And this is one answer and it stinks. I don't like this answer. And so then I, you know, show them progressively which one I do like, but there are elements of all of them I like a little, and, you know, so yeah, I always do that, but I can feel I'm getting disappointed and pulling their disappointment way down. And then, they're excited later. You can't just go for that thing.
I think Thomas Edison is the one who figured it out or just illustrated that, talking about the light bulb, you know, mm-hmm.
which it was he stole from someone else, but anyway,
right. It was a simple solution, but he said that we got this way, but now I know there's just one way it worked, but now I know what 1,000 ways that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we go through the design process, is going through all those iterations of stuff that doesn't work.
Yeah.
And you got to work it out. And even if the sometimes it's the client's idea to say, hey, I want to do something this way, you've got to go through the illustration of this is why it doesn't work,
right,
to get to the something that does work. But most clients, they just want to get that done. They want the end product. They don't want to go along the ride. I say they want to have the experience and they want to have the memories of playing in the mud without getting their hands dirty.
I think that's a fair point. Yeah. Yeah. So you bring that back to the models that Kenya and Matt create for Sticks and Bricks, which they're creating them all individually, one at a time as they're ordered, apparently. So interesting. I think it'll be super interesting to watch how that business grows and how it evolves and how it progresses.
This is what we need to do. This is how we need to serve both ourselves initially and ultimately many other people, many other children, with an activity to keep them busy. And why not give them an opportunity to learn about architecture, our passion, which is something that we didn't get the opportunity to do as children. At middle school age, did we see the newspaper with the floor plans? But before that, there was no exposure to it. And we said, well, what and how can we do this and create something for them? And so we came up with Five Archicamp, which was a spin-off naming of Five Architecture. The five in Five Architecture is resemblant of our family, which is, you know, part of our basis of balancing our family and our business, and it's all one. And we created Five Archicamp. And the word camp was one of those that we felt like it was important to give kids an option to have an activity to do or have something that could keep them focused. And in the early stages, it was a multi-day process of building a model, an architectural model, ones that we would build in college. But we were tailoring it to kids that were seven and up. And they can definitely glue, they can definitely cut. And we figured out a way to create something that hadn't been created before, which was an architectural model building kit for kids. So the model that you spent hours and hours building in college, we've packaged up in a way that they could do it on their own. We had video instruction and we would walk them through the steps in 1 hour chunks over the course of a few days to go from a bag of parts to a finished architectural model.
I love the fact that they do have this feedback loop, and Matt talked about the fact that they originally, the original models back when they called it ArchiCamp, were finished things. You buy this model, you put this thing together, and now there's room for exploration and creativity. So I love that. And I think, you know, along the lines of what you're talking about with the exploration and the design process with your clients, maybe that this latest version with the kids is partially that they get to explore the design process. And like you said, Ken, earlier, these may create better clients, if not architects or something like that. But just fascinated and really, really inspired, I guess, by their story.
And a fun job for them because they get to design all the new projects. So yeah, I think that would be fun.
Well, I remember at the last place that I worked at, there was this set of schematic design drawings. I think they were drawn on trays on the wall, and I don't think it ever got built, and I never met the clients, but everything was his and hers. These people had his and hers bathroom, his and hers office or study, and his and hers kitchen. And to me, that was a dream come true. I would love a house
that sounds great
with two kitchens. Again, I think they're doing a great thing with their camp. They said they started it when they realized they needed something for their kids to do during the summer.
Yeah. I think that's where the name and inspiration came from, but I don't think it was ever just summer camp. But that was the problem they were solving, certainly, was as school was shutting down. Oh my gosh, if you listen to their interview on the Entree Architect podcast, I think Kenya talks about the fact that, you know, they had the kids signed up for all kinds of things through the summer. Everything was shutting down, and it was, you know, it was that realization that a lot of parents has, what are we going to do?
But I think to me personally, the takeaway is that if we want to engage the general public, the non-architects, whether they are adults or children, we have to go to where they are. We have to go to their level, get down on the carpet and play with them and not try to drag them into our world. I think they're doing a great job in that. I mean, I'm sure the results will take years to be evident, but I did like their approach.
I think that is a fantastic takeaway. Get down on their level. If that means it's the carpet, it's the carpet.
Architecture on the carpet. What is that?
Who wrote that?
It's a book that it's written by Brenda and Robert Vail. And it's the subtitle is The Curious Tale of Construction Toys and the Genesis of Modern Buildings.
Hmm. That's interesting.
That sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like Matt and Kenny ought to be in that book. Well, what did you think? Did you hear something in there that you can use in your practice today? If you are so inspired by this conversation that you'd like to watch the entire Context and Clarity Live episode, head on over to the Entree Architect YouTube channel. There's a playlist there that has all of the full Context and Clarity Live episodes. And if you want more of the Context and Clarity podcast delivered to you every week, give us a thumbs up and subscribe wherever you consume podcasts.
If you like content like this, check out Gable Media. It's a multimedia network for people that care about the built environment, and it's the home of Context and Clarity. With Gable's growing family of podcasts and video channels, I know you'll find something there that interests you. You can learn more at gablemedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com. And one last thing before you go. If the topic of today's episode is of particular interest to you, join me over on Facebook today at 4 p.m. Eastern inside the Entre Architect Community Facebook group. That's where every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern, I host Context and Clarity Conversations, and we take topics like this and we dig deeper. We have a conversation in real time to try to find more clarity around the things that matter most to you. So thanks for listening. I hope our time together has inspired you to think about your community and your practice and how you can support those around you. We'll be back here again next week. And in the meantime, I hope you'll join me and the Entre Architect community on Facebook today at 4 p.m. Eastern so that we can help each other find more clarity around the topics that matter most, no matter what your context is.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.